My guest today is Christian Beale of The Transmissions. We're going to listen to a bunch of tracks from some new and old Transmission recordings and talk about the whole process. So let's get going with that. We'll start with a track from CD he brought in for us. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org.
See nice.
And we're back on Is Good on killradio.org. And my guest is Christian Beale of the Transmissions. How's it going, man?
It's going good. Thanks.
Thanks for coming in on an early morning. I know you're not a morning person. So why don't we start with just a breakdown of what we were just listening to. This is not yet released, or it is released?
Well, I guess it's as released as anything we would ever release or have released as this band. We tend to do all of our releases as semi-self-releases that we usually fail to promote.
So you just kind of manufacture them as
we work really hard on writing the songs. We work hard on recording them. We package them as nice as we can, and then we forget to tell anyone about them, and then we move on to writing more songs.
So it's the business side of things that turns you off.
I suck at the. It's not even that it turns me off. I think I really genuinely suck at the business side of things. It's like I forget. My brain shuts down when it's time to have to do something else with the album, other than play those songs live or start writing more songs. So the short answer to your question is that it is released, and that we have finished the recording. We're making individually hand-painted covers for each EP, and we're just kind of selling them at shows. We're going to send them out to friends and other fans who have expressed interest, radio stations, and through our website, maybe sell it or something.
All right. So you're not associated with any kind of label or anything like that? It's sort of all up to you guys?
Yeah, other than the sort of faux label name that we created, which is called Scary Elevator Records, named from Denise, the drummer, and myself being trapped in an elevator on a regular basis at our old practice space.
Nice.
So we've released one, two, three EPs, one of them kind of like an extended EP, and one full length. So this is our fourth release on Scary Elevator Records, our own label.
Now you guys have been a staple in the indie rock scene for a while now, it seems.
We're more like
several
a
paperclip.
Than a staple. We don't seem to hold as well as all the other staples.
But I mean, you seem to pop up wherever there's some indie rock thing going.
Yeah.
Or maybe because you're associated with a lot of similar indie rock bands.
Yeah.
I know you're part of the Central Second Collective, and I've had a lot of those guys on the show. One Trick Pony, Death to Anders, and so forth. How long have... Also, the Transmissions have gone through many different
changes.
Is it Christian and his band, the Transmissions, or is it more of a concept?
To some extent, it's me in that I'm writing a lot of the material, but it's never me in that I can't do any of these things on my own unless I have people that are creative and are creating their own ideas with it, too. So it's never been like... This is me and my band. I certainly have my creative ideas and my songs that I want to try and that sort of thing. But they would be completely different songs with each band member that's involved. So it's not like these current three people that I'm playing with, the drummer Denise, Jeff on second guitar, and Corey on bass. If I had these same four songs on this EP playing with three other people, they would sound completely different. It's not like... This is the song, and I'm going to make these three people play it the same way each time. So if that makes sense, it is kind of me in that I keep writing the material. It's the genesis of a lot of the songs. But
regardless, I mean, it still has to ultimately end up being
a band.
A quality that you identify as the Transmissions.
Yeah. Well, that's – even that's been a challenge lately because, our recent lineup was – myself, Denise on drums, and Josh Solberg on bass. And we made two albums together, Overwires and our last EP, Burning the Winter. And, we kind of developed more and more of a sound that was specific to that lineup. And, as tends to happen in any relationship, things change and, people butt heads or want to try different things and
stab each other with syringes filled with air.
Exactly. Yeah. And so things moved on to a different lineup, and thus the sound changed.
Right.
Because the Corey is not going to play the same way that Josh played, and that's going to make the songs different. And I wanted to try writing some different style songs, and so that sort of sound of the Transmissions has been under scrutiny to some extent. You know, I'm not sure who is scrutinizing us or who is even paying that close of attention. But from what feedback I've gotten from the people who do know us, you get this sort of sense of, on one hand, some people are really excited about the quote-unquote new direction we're going.
The evolution.
Other people are like, God, this sucks compared to like the more exciting or, you know, like experimental compositions that you
but
did
you,
before.
But I guess every band has to deal with that. I mean, with every album, you know, it's just sort of like, you know, was this as good as the last one in what ways? And, you know, since different people respond to different parts of your music, you're never going to be able to satisfy everyone.
Sure. I guess you can, because I think we all have this experience as listeners to music, because you follow that band that you love, and you either become one of those people who are a fan that is on board with no matter what they release. Like, the next thing could be like them talking the whole time, and you're like, that's the, you know, most brilliant thing ever. And then there's others that you know, scrutinize because you feel it. You feel like maybe they're losing it. You know, you hear there were those great like 2-3 releases, and then they start getting all soft and watered down, and you think, well, their creative energy is over. You know, they're like done with that. But I think like most of us as listeners kind of get the sense of being able to tell that someone's trying something different as opposed to they're done.
it depends on the band. Like, I feel like with some bands, like whatever they release, I'm that way. It's like I'm preconditioned to want to like it because of everything that their music has brought to my life, you know?
Right, right.
And then there are other bands where, you know, I really liked their early stuff, and they started releasing stuff that I didn't quite understand, and then they started releasing stuff that I didn't like, and then it's like, oh man, they're releasing another album?
Yeah.
Come on, guys, don't fuck this one up, you know?
And this could be a terrible example because in the indie rock scene there are much cooler bands to reference, but I'm an old, you know, fan of U2, and I really liked U2 for a long time, even up through things like Octoon Baby and Zooropa, even though it would be a mixed bag sometimes.
Right.
Some of the songs would be like, But even though it sounded to me different than some earlier, way earlier stuff like October or Boy.
Yeah, but it was still them trying something new.
It was still them trying something new, and I was into it. And then something started to shift, and then I felt like they were just releasing crappy music. And maybe it was just me changing, and if I went back and really closely examined their catalog, I would see that I was duped the whole time, and just that my nostalgia for growing up with part of that music made me like them longer than I should have. But
right.
I felt like there was a definite shift, whereas some band like Radiohead, again, I'm quoting like two easily referenced bands, I'm, you know, quoting this random offshoot, you know,
but these are bands that I listen to and define the music industry too.
And they, I feel like, to some extent, have keep challenging themselves every album. They could have just tried to make a bunch of pop, you know, like catchy songs like The Bends the rest of their career, and that would have been more like the path of U2.
Yeah,
they're trying stuff that, you know, alienates a lot of people. You know, they're like, that's not a happy song.
But that's good. I mean, because they challenge their audience, and, you know, that's sort of where you get – I think that's where you end up with real fans, when you can sort of question their faith, and then they still follow you because they believe in what you're doing.
The cult of Radiohead.
Yeah. Why don't we listen to another track,
sure,
and then we'll talk about the process and putting together your music. Should I just go on to the next one?
Yeah, we can go on to the next one. This is the ballady, the slowy song.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org, and we're talking about The Transmissions. Stick around.
My mind is gray and wet, that's what the signs say. My heart is flushing it, but thoughts don't go away. My hands express intent. I wish I knew what it meant. to sleep just to keep me here. If I had only known, I would have moved it more. All eyes follow eyes, I said it once before. I can't keep mine in one place. Should I move less or more? So guilty, so small size of creating now another stir and another stir.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org, and my guest is Christian Beale, The Transmissions. So what came for you first, man? Was it singing or playing guitar?
It definitely wasn't singing. When I first tried to sing, and I was involved in performing arts starting around like high school age, I wanted to sing, but everything I tried to audition for, like in musicals or whatever would involve singing, I was pretty much like, you know, panned as the non-singer of the group. You know, I was kind of good at dance, mm-hmm. which was the thing I wasn't that crazy about being good at, but I'd much rather have been able to sing better. And so I always looked at myself as not a good singer. And so I started with the guitar first in college. And then as I played guitar, I tried to write songs. And so I tried to sing them. And again, I recorded some things and got looked at as like, hey, your voice sounds not so good. So I kind of like gave up on it for a while. And then I came back to it when I decided to work on a cruise ship for money to get out of the rest of my like school debt. And I took an acoustic guitar on the ship with me, and I just practiced all the time playing guitar and singing and trying to figure out how to like sing while you're playing guitar. And
in the ocean, no one can hear you scream.
Exactly. I did play a lot on the the great thing about being on a cruise ship and working on it is you get to go in the secret areas that as a passenger, you're not allowed to go on, like the big area at the front of the ship where the anchors come out. And it's way below the level where all the other passengers can go. So it's really close to the waterline. And you go there at night, and like this enormous ship is plowing through the middle of the ocean. And you're like, it's kind of cool.
That's pretty awesome.
You can sing as loud as you want down there, and no one is going to hear you, and I would definitely practice singing down there a lot. But
did you do a lot of writing at that time too? I mean, there must have been kind
really,
of a creative vibe.
Kind of. It really wasn't so much writing during that period. It was like getting the confidence to play and sing. I wrote a couple of things, but I think they were pretty crappy. Maybe the current stuff I'm writing is crappy, but I don't have that perspective now, and I have a little bit more confidence. But that helped me feel better about my voice, and then the next thing that I did is I busked. I think that's the English term for playing your guitar for money out on the street. My goal wasn't even to play it for money. It was to just play outside because I was too nervous about
– be comfortable with people seeing
walking
it.
By and seeing me play, because in my apartment, I was too self-conscious about singing. So I just imagined my neighbor next door like hearing me go and just judging me or something. So – for some reason, it was better to be anonymous and just out in the middle of the street playing and singing, knowing that people aren't really paying attention to you. And then that helped me get more confidence about – so, I do feel like I sing better now than I did before. And I remember the first times that I got some sort of compliments on my voice. Like it was actually a positive thing instead of a negative thing. And I couldn't believe it.
You must have sort of developed your own style of singing too,
yeah,
to match your voice.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not the same style of singing from, like a lot of the greatest singer-songwriters were really not technically,
singers.
Wouldn't have won American Idol,
no,
you know?
No.
Which is a good thing,
yeah.
So you must have developed your own, the Christian doing it.
I think you do tend to do that the more you just keep going at something and not worry about it. Not worry about necessarily trying to sound like someone else, but just keep going until you get comfortable with doing it. So it's true. Confidence makes a big difference in one's abilities to do something. And so you have to work past those insecurities, and you have to work to the point that you feel comfortable with yourself doing whatever it is you're doing. And then I guess you get better or perceived to be better. I don't know.
And then at what point did you say, okay, now it's time to put together a band?
I don't know. I think I knew I wanted to try to play in a band because I was writing more songs by myself. And then I met Denise at Spaceland just randomly, just started talking to her, and she mentioned she played drums. So her and I and her friend Steve sort of messed around at her at Steve's mother's house, and that was kind of the egg of the idea.
So it just kind of happened. It wasn't like you went out looking for band members.
Not really. But then the search began for after that, because Steve wasn't really – he was playing bass, but he wasn't really into just going at it as a band. And then the whole process started of like finding band members. And we went through – we've had one, two, three, four. This is our fourth bass player. Fourth bass player. So that's been the rotating member. So
your current bass player must be kind of nervous, huh?
Yeah, right.
It's a dangerous band to play bass in.
You have a fuse attached to your back.
Yeah.
You're gonna explode it. I mean, kudos to Denise for sticking with it for so long. And I know I'm a fairly neurotic person. I'm fairly... probably not always easy to work with. I recognize that I'm enthusiastic about things, and I definitely trying to challenge myself to be like genuine and original, but it doesn't always make me easy to work with.
Right.
So,
as long as you're not unfairly neurotic.
Yeah, I hope not. I'm neurotic about my neuroses, so
fair enough.
Hopefully I'm fair in my
Let's listen to some more music. What's this other CD that you brought in?
Well, that's the previous EP. I decided I'd bring it just for a frame of reference. Things up. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's have a listen to that. What track do you recommend?
You know, it doesn't really matter. I mean, the first track is the one that we probably play from it the most. It's the one that we play in the set right now. There's two songs on here that we have in our set, and the first one's All Run It, and the fifth track is Rogue King Nation. So your choice, whichever track you want to land on.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guests are The Transmissions, myspace.com/The Transmissions. Stick around. We'll be right back. And we're back on Is Good on killradio.org. So, speaking of the Transmissions and their music, tell me about what, lyrically, what you tend to keep coming back to. I mean, you say you write the bulk of the material, so what kind of songs do you like to write?
At least generally the chord changes in lyrics and melody line, you know, as the material.
But, are there certain themes that you come back to on a regular basis? Or?
You know, I'd have to go back and analyze my material to see what it is, but I'm sure there are recurring themes that come back because it's whatever I'm obsessed with thinking about. It's usually like a lot of the material is like self-acknowledgement, you know, acknowledging that I'm doing something that I don't think I should be doing, but I recognize, you know, like that this is the nature of how a person is, and, you know, just kind of like the self-reflexive lyrics, but from a personal point of view, so I don't know that they sound so literal.
So do you prefer to write in sort of abstract terms as opposed to, you know, this is a story about...
Yeah, well, I mean, it's boring to, like... I had always been bugged by... when I was studying lyrics, like reading other bands' lyrics, and you'd hear interviewers ask them questions about, well, what does this song mean, and what does that mean? And you'd read their lyrics and try to figure it out. And at one point, I kind of wanted to know, like, well, what... literally does it mean? And I'd always hear these singers like you know, avoid the question or dodge it, and it always bugged me. I'd be like, oh, you're just like, you know, like walking
just being
the fence.
Evasive
or, yeah, evasive or it doesn't really mean anything or something like that. But when I came into my own writing lyrics and feeling happy about the lyrics I wrote, I kind of felt like I got the concept of it's like, it's a personal thing. It doesn't add up necessarily logically in your head. Like, this line literally means this. This literally means that. It does mean something to you, but it's kind of like they come from different places. Imagery. You can think of the idea or the problem that you're trying to solve in your life or whatever, and this phrase seems to capture that problem, you know, in some way, in mood or theme or whatever, and you string all this stuff together as song lyrics, and then when someone does want to reduce it down, you feel like it robs them of the potential experience of, you know, filling in their own blanks. And then I started really appreciating that, and then finding enjoyment in being able to have open interpretation of another band's lyrics that, you know, rather than it just being literal.
Right.
Well, I want to love you forever.
Yeah.
And ever.
That's what ruins, you know, the easiest way to ruin a song is to have a great video to go with it, you know, because then that's what the song is about, whether that's what the song is about or not.
Yeah, that's true.
So that can be a frustrating experience if you really like a song and then it becomes popular because it has a great video or something like that. And
definitely.
It's like the meaning for you has been taken away.
Yeah, we made one video so far of that song that you just played, and I made it from archive footage that I found on a free site called archive.org, and I don't know that people have now associated the lyric or meaning of that song with that video, but I did notice the effect that a video has on the music, because I think one of the first couple of comments that I got on the video was like, they talked about the song more. Like, just by watching the video, it made them listen to the song more deeply or something.
Like, investigate the song.
Yeah, like, it's, you need the visual to really pay attention to your listening.
Interesting.
The first comment someone gave after watching the video was like, man, that song is really, like, high energy.
They didn't feel that way before they saw the imagery.
I mean, like they needed the visuals to sort of unlock what was going on in the music, and I found that really interesting. And it makes sense. We're a very visually obsessed culture.
Yeah. Well, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about, like, you. When we started this interview, it was about, you know, overcoming certain obstacles. First was, you know, gaining the confidence to sing, and then finding people to play with to create the band, and then sort of the next obstacle that generally comes up is actually performing as a band on a stage.
Yeah.
What was that like the first time going up there as the Transmissions? Was it here in LA?
Sure. I think it was like 14 below or something. You know, a lot of people start there. I mean, I know, I think the first Happy Hollows show I ever saw and that they ever played was 14 below. If it wasn't the first show, they played like one show before that at in someone's apartment or something. Mm-hmm. But it that was the first live show, I'm pretty sure, that they played. And I think that was one of our first live shows. And
was that a nerve-wracking experience for you?
Yeah.
Or do you feel confident enough? You've been practicing and everything?
We've been practicing a lot. You know, I didn't remember being too nervous. I think it was more anxious and excited to be doing it. I think I got most of that, you know, nervousness out of the way by just playing out a lot and on the street. So, I wasn't as nervous then. But I don't remember the experience crystal clear. I'm sure I got a little drunk to help with the process, which I don't endorse, by the way. I'm not, you know, just saying you have to get drunk to play.
Do you like to play live, or would you prefer to be in the studio recording?
No, I love to play live. I definitely love to play live for a lot of people over few people. Though I take it as a compliment that a lot of shows that we've played that have been, like, quote-unquote poorly attended.
Poorly attended.
You know, where there'll be, like, you know, five people in the room. Sometimes I am even more invested in that show because I'm so, like, we carried all this equipment here and I was so excited to play it. I'm like, damn it, I'm going to play. Like, there's, like, 500 people here because this is what we enjoy doing is playing music. But there's still, like, this deeper inner sadness because when we have played for a ton of people, it just feels so much better. It really does change the way you play. And it's not just because you look and recognize there are a lot of people out there and try harder. It is literally them giving you energy, and it changes everything about the way you play. So, you know, obviously some of our best shows have been ones that were really well attended. Like, we played at South by Southwest, completely unpromoted. No one knew. We were officially part of the festival, but we didn't have any buzz or anything. We just randomly got a really good slot, and there were so many people in that room. My definition of so many is maybe like 300, you know.
That's a lot of people,
which is a lot of people to play for.
Especially in the indie rock scene. Yeah. I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about, the five people there. And
yeah. And it was like one of the best shows ever because people were screaming in the middle of the song, like going crazy at the end of it. And they'd never heard us before. But I felt that power of like that group energy happening. It's like mob mentality or something. Like they all sort of like start feeding off each other's energy. And then we start feeding off of it. And then you have a really good time playing music instead of playing, you know, at the Silver Lake Lounge or whatever for six people and, you know, feeling like, well, that was weird.
It's one of the great things about something like South by Southwest is, you know, people go to that festival to see cool music. Like, yeah. That's the objective. And maybe there's one or two bands that drew them there, but yeah. There's a lot of people, I think, that go there
searching
to see music. Yeah. So those 300 people, you know, they weren't there to see the Transmissions, but they saw the Transmissions and they liked it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a struggle a lot of indie artists have in LA, where it's the opposite of that. People come to see the one band that they came to see. And if you don't, you know, maybe you might find another band in that lineup if you stick around. But it's really hard to promote out here. It's because
really
people aren't coming for the music. They're coming for the band.
I definitely feel like a big shift happened in us playing live when the collective started coming together. And I still feel very fortunate to know this collection of bands because we weren't friends first, and then we were like, oh, hey, I got a band going, you know, come see my band. Like, we all became friends pretty much based on liking each other's music, and
right.
took a long time to happen in the scene. Like, the first year and a half or 2 years that we were playing out as a band here, I felt that same experience playing a live show. Not liking the band that was playing before us, wishing they'd be done, you know, like going, God, I just want to play. This is really bad music. I hate that I'm here. How are these people that are watching this band going to like us? Because it just seems like two completely different things. And then once the collective started coming together,
And just for our audience's sake, describe what the we're talking about with the collective.
Is a group of bands that was originally it was us, the Transmissions, Deaf to Anders, the Happy Hollows, Die Rockers Die, and One Trick Pony, and Anchors for Architects was the sixth band. It started with four bands first, and then we added, I think, Die Rockers Die, and then we added Anchors for Architects. When I say added, we asked them, look, we formed this collective. We called it something. All we're really doing is supporting each other. We happen to like each other's music a lot, so, and we all play a lot of shows together. Let's just give this group a name, you know, like it's an entity in itself. But it didn't really serve any purpose. We weren't, you know, like... It wasn't a record label or something
right,
like
just
that.
The
though
Central
I did
Second
try
Collective.
To make that.
Oh, yeah?
I tried to make it a record label a lot. No one would go for it. Because a lot of people are looking for a definition of, well, then what the hell is the collective? And I was like, well, why not just make it a record label and then we can bring other people on? And
but essentially, it's a group of musicians group of who musicians. Have agreed to support each other's music.
Yeah.
Go to each other's shows.
And kind of like give it a name so that – because we so firmly believed in the other person's music that we thought, well, if someone does discover you, we think that they might like us as well because we've had trouble finding other people out there that we also like. So if we just give it a name, then maybe when you do hear Deaf to Anders music, you go like, oh, they're really cool. They're in some collective. And then you discover all these other bands that you
right.
actually really like, you know, hopefully. But anyway, Anchors at one point left the collective, and which is totally fine. We love them. There's no, like, hard feelings.
And now you have the Henry Clay
and the
people,
the Henry
right?
Clay people are in it now. And Die Rockers Die still exists, but they haven't really been playing shows. They split up. And now Josh, who used to play bass with us, I think is playing with them. So I'm excited to see them play out again. But the collective in general, it's an experiment, and I'm not – there are things about it that work, but it's definitely – there are things about it that seem to possibly cause more frustration than good because there's this expectation that also sits on it with all the bands or some of the bands. And we've had many meetings about it to try to figure out what this entity exists. And we eventually just had to come to, look, all it is that name that we gave to help link other people to each other's music. But as far as like each band wants to branch out and meet other bands and play with other bands, and we don't want to be insular and alienate other bands, but in doing so, like as each band achieves different levels of success or does different things, there's kind of like this tension that's put on the collective as like, well, what about, you know, us or like,
yeah.
or is this band, if this band does this, are they going to help these bands or are
well,
they going to help another
band? The definition
band
of the term collective.
Yeah. Which I'm not saying there's anything inherently wrong with. I'm just acknowledging there are good things and bad things about it. On one hand, it helps. On the other hand, it kind of creates this tension of, you know, to what extent are we able to help each other out, you know?
Right. Well, I guess the important thing is that at least you're trying to do something.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because otherwise it's going to be the same thing every time, you know,
right.
and the same gigs with the same five people.
Right, and no one, and none of us want that because it definitely gets boring. But I'm just acknowledging that because it, some people have asked us, you know, about the collective, like about wanting to join or mm-hmm. or criticizing, like, well, what point does a collective serve? And it's definitely a two-edged sword.
Yeah, and I've seen it just from a lot of bands I've had on the show. There does seem to be a very slowly, gently growing trend of forming collectives. Maybe not necessarily yeah. identifying it with a name, but sort of forming bonds between bands, you know, musicians that have enough in common that it's like, you know what, I'll come support your show, you'll come support my show.
Yeah.
I'll try to, you know, if I have an empty slot on the bill, you know, you'll be the first one to come to mine,
right.
vice versa, things like that.
Yeah.
And that helps get people there.
And that's where the tension comes, is that because those expectations start forming, like, oh, I'll definitely hook you up with this. Well, when I get this, I'll definitely hook you
right.
up with this. Then when you start branching out and meeting other bands that are kind of helping pull you up, then there is this tension of, well, now who's going to help who first this time? Because you know, the new, it's like the new, not obligation, but the new favoritism tends to start shifting to these other bands. And then you're right. Like, well, the collector doesn't seem to have a definition anymore, you know, because the favoritism that sort of inherently happened within it starts disintegrating and or then causes tension. So yeah.
And you know, not to air our dirty laundry, we have the same thing goes on in any collective and a Kill Radio as well, where it's, you know, we have a lot of members who are involved, but they have different levels of commitment and different understandings of what the term collective means.
Right.
And so there is this sense of, but what are you doing to be in the collective, you know, or why do you get to do this, or how come you're not doing this? And it does create a natural tension. And yet, on the other hand, there is an advantage because it's not just you having to make all the decisions. There's people that you can work with.
And there's also some sort of upward progress thing that goes on with any band. Because
any band is a collective too.
Exactly. And the thing is that all of us, as nice as we want to be as people, as human beings, we're all self-centered to some extent. We're in this, you know.
Not me. I'm perfect.
You're right. But, I mean, we're all looking out for our own interests.
Yeah.
Even if our interests are really generous interests, like we really do want to help as many people as we can in life and et cetera.
But we want to be recognized for being the guy that does to that.
Or at least be successful to the extent, like, I want to make money from playing music, but only so I can live.
Right.
Not so I can be like sick rich. I just pay that bill, you know, like pay all those basic living expenses. And so to that extent, I'm self-centered with my band because I want it as an entity to be successful enough to hopefully sustain myself.
And you don't think of it as just a hobby either. I mean, we really want the transmissions to be something that lasts and means something.
And so with that, I don't know, that self-centered approach, it forces you to kind of want to move up the hill. And in terms of a collective, then that also brings some tension to the table. With parallels to even the Kill Radio station, it'd be like if this station got adopted by, like, it didn't want to be it wanted to be put on the, you know, radio tower and have a signal in LA, and only like 4 DJs got pulled up to that ranks, but yet all these DJs had been putting in investing so much time.
Right.
You would kind of be like, well, wait a minute. Well, why aren't we all going up instead, like all these new DJs come in?
Right, and you would feel that the responsibility of those 4 DJs to bring the other ones up.
Yeah.
But then that would be based on whether or not those 4 DJs felt that those other DJs were doing what they should be doing and blah, blah, blah.
Right,
yeah.
But yet the only reason those 4 DJs rose up to the now radio broadcast signal station is because these other DJs started this company and said, we're going to bring you up to this. And
in other words, events that occurred outside of the collective.
It's a, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, such is the frustrations of life and being an artist and trying to be a band in a city with a lot of bands.
Yeah. Well, before we solve the mysteries of the universe, let's listen to some more music, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about your upcoming gigs.
Okay.
What should we play?
Maybe track 3 from the new EP.
Right. And again,
the new EP is called Up From the Spinner.
And if somebody wants to get this now, can they just contact you on MySpace or something and send it to them? Or?
Yeah, it's on MySpace. I'm at the point where I'd much rather you have music for free, have it rather than feel like you're not going to have it because you have to pay for it. So, you know, we'll definitely send you like free MP3s or anything like that. But if you want the packaged thing, then email us and, you know, give us a couple of bucks and we'll mail you.
How very Radiohead of you.
Yeah.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org, having a discussion here with Christian Biel of the Transmissions. Stick around. Here's some more music for you.
I see the time I'm fading, I got no eyes, and it's all gone strange.
Listening to Is Good on killradio.org, and we're listening to tracks from the latest EP, Up From the Spinner, by The Transmissions. myspace.com/thetransmissions, where you get, is that the place to go to get all the info you need?
That's the one that's most updated.
Okay. Because you are an indie rocker and you know, you kind of, and you don't have a label telling you how to do your music, and you know, and you've gone through many changes with your band and many changes in the way your music comes out, you have that freedom to do that. Are there concerns about the future, like, you know, things you want to make sure you don't do, directions you don't take The Transmissions in, sort of listening to contemporary music on corporate radio and things that are popular now? Do you ever hear stuff and go, okay, I definitely don't want The Transmissions to end up doing that. I got to make sure when I write music for my band that I'm not doing this, you know?
Yeah. I don't think I limit myself too much based on what is happening as a trend elsewhere or what I would, I think it's just more like personal taste. Like, I'll either find something aesthetically pleasing or not aesthetically pleasing. And that pretty much dictates what we do. It's a challenge for us to some extent to be successful, because we're not really writing genre music. I know indie rock seems like it's a genre, but it's such a catch-all.
Well, yeah, talking about words that have confusing definitions, yeah. Like collective, indie rock is definitely another one.
Yeah. You know, it's, I like to think that our music is unique in and of itself, it doesn't really strive to sound like one other band or one other type of music. It just starts with a song idea, and then that song idea comes together, and the mood of the song dictates, you know, whatever genre you would call it. So, you know, and I don't know if I'm getting off track here, but I guess what I'm trying to say is that I don't really limit myself into what I might do or not do, because I like a broad range of things. Mm-hmm. I like some pretty cheesy stuff. I like some pretty weird stuff. I like depressing stuff. I like happy stuff. So I'm fine with doing all of it.
Do you try to work that attitude into your live shows as well? Like, if someone comes to see a Transmissions show, are they going to get a mix of happy songs and sad songs? And
hopefully. It just depends on, I guess, the show and maybe the other bands that we're playing with. If it's a pretty pop-oriented show, we try to lay – I mean, I usually – I'm not much for, like – I don't want to confront the audience. This isn't completely true. I've – in the past, some of my performance styles is confrontational with the audience, in that I will let myself go and kind of flail about and, like, fall into people or get up in their face. And in that sense, I do get confrontational sometimes, but I guess what I mean is I really want people to be happy and have a good time. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to go into a room of a bunch of people that clearly don't want to hear a certain type of music and then force that music down their throat, like in a sort of like F-U way.
Right.
Know if I can cuss. I don't think I could cuss.
No, you can.
Okay, well, an F-U way anyway.
You can't abbreviate that. Okay. There's no room for abbreviation on this show.
So if that makes sense, I do try to – there are some songs of ours that are more like weird or mathy or challenging, and I kind of get a sense that this is not what this audience would be into. But even then, you start going down a confusing path because – you can never really guess what people are into. I've played many, many, many shows where I don't think this one song is going to go over well, and that's the song that everyone loves the most. So maybe it all just comes back to play whatever makes you happy and let everything else fall into place.
Well, and audiences generally don't know what they want either until they've heard it, and then they decide. You know, that's part of the problem, what we were talking about before with telling someone what a song is about or associating it with a certain imagery is, you know, you're telling the audience how they're supposed to feel about it before they've really had a chance to really listen to the song. Yeah.
And that's what makes them grow close to your music anyway, I think, is if they do have an opportunity to invest themselves in it. If there is no room for investment and it's just on the surface is what it is, then it'll come and go. You know, you won't.
Yeah. Well, that's how I feel about if I ever have the misfortune of tuning into corporate radio, I hear a lot of I feel like the music is being played at me, instead of to me. You know, there's never that opportunity to discover a new song. I mean, that's not true. It's not that there never is, but it's very rare these days that I listen to the radio and halfway through the song, I decide to turn it up because it's piqued my interest and I think it might, you know, and I'm connected with it in some way.
Right.
For the most part, it might as well just be a commercial for a car insurance company. You know, it's just being thrown at me.
There's no room for discovery, and it's to some extent likable right away, and therefore and easy to get, and
like fast food,
and it will come. You know, it will come and go. You won't. I found. For the most part, the songs that were a bit of a challenge for me when I first heard them become my favorite songs.
Yeah.
The bands that I wasn't so certain about became my favorite bands. There's a few in there that, you know, I just liked right away and, you know, still like. They manage that balance of, like, catchy and accessible, but underneath the surface there's a lot going on. And, for the most part.
Where are you guys playing next?
Good question. Well, we were supposed to play Fresno next Wednesday, but that show got canceled as well. There's some booking confusion up there. So I think our next show is I think it's November 1st at the Knitting Factory with the Guppies and Mospita. We were tentatively supposed to play November 4th at Spaceland with Rademacher and haven't heard back from them yet. So booking's a challenge.
Well, and you have experience also. You book for the cocaine once a week or once a month?
It used to be once a week. It's gone to once a month. And honestly, I think it might go to zero times a month because I kept whittling it down because I was burnt out on it. And
it's time-consuming.
It's time-consuming.
A lot of variables to consider.
Yeah. And I'm just not fully invested in it in a way that I'm doing anyone a service. So I'll probably wind it down. We do have a show coming up October 24th, which will potentially be the last one, with a band from Tucson that we just played with called Mostly Bears. Manhattan Murder Mystery is playing. And
oh, they played one of our benefits.
Oh, did they?
Lost
cool.
Souls.
Yeah. And I'm going blank on the third band, but I know they're great. I just can't remember who it is at the moment.
And they're listening right now.
They're listening right now. Yeah. They know I love them. I just, you know, can't think of it.
Do you like to book a bunch of transmission shows like in advance and play out a lot? Like, are you booking yourself in terms of trying to promote this new EP, or are you just keeping your chops up?
Not really. It's always a contest within the band, contesting each other for what we want to do. And inevitably, one member of the band is really into wanting to play out a lot during that period, and all the others just want to lay low. Personally, I'd like to play less shows than more shows, and those shows be bigger shows, you know.
Right.
We play once a month or something, and it's well attended because that's the show to come to, or once every month and a half or something. Rather than just playing all over the place, because it's kind of depressing in this city. There's, no matter how much a person likes your band, there's too much else going on. Everyone knows a band. You're always going to stretch your audience thin. Even if you find a new fan, chances are they won't be able to make it to your next four shows because they've got other plans those dates.
Right. And so they'll show up at the fifth show if you keep playing. But
if you don't play, but every once, you know, month and a half, when that one time rolls around, they go like, "That's the time I gotta go. This band only plays every once in a while." You know, that's how I feel now. I would obviously feel differently if we were playing a tour or we could play like well attended shows on a regular basis. I'd be fine with playing more frequently. But rather than playing a poorly attended show or a show with the same 20 people that have seen us a ton of times, I'd rather be in the studio like writing new material or recording a new song and spreading that music to someone in Ohio or something who has never heard us, rather than playing for the same, you know, 20, 30 people who have heard us.
Are you already doing that now? Like, you just finished the EP, or you are already recording new stuff?
Well, we're writing new stuff, and we're talking about working with an engineer this next time. Three out of our four releases we've recorded ourselves, this next one we're talking about working with an engineer. So we're looking at a couple of different studios and try that process again.
Well, cool. Well, keep us updated, and let's sign off with another track from the CD.
Sure, that would be track 4, Leave the Neighborhood. So thanks again for having me on here.
Yeah, thanks for coming down, and you're always welcome, and we'll have you back sometime over the next couple of months when you have more music.
Sounds good.
My guest has been Christian Beal of The Transmissions, myspace.com/TheTransmissions, and you're listening to Is Good on killradio.org.
of the